Welcome to Radio Free Space. My name is Michael Beezer, producer for Kirsten Ledberg and Dwight Zitlow.
Thank you. So we're here for a second hour of Radio Free Space, and I've been speaking with Dwight Zitlow about his philosophy on life, how he finds life to be romantic when you appreciate the challenges, the ups and downs, all the learning opportunities, and take the time to reflect and to appreciate where you've come from and how you've grown. And so now he's going to share with us a little bit more about his philosophies. We had spoken about his wild ride when he was younger. And if anyone's interested in learning more about that, Dwight, where would they be able to find more information?
All right. So that happened in 2015, and it was Memorial Weekend. The ride happened on a Friday. It was my daughter Neshoba's wedding. It was rehearsal. Friday night, I was going down to rehearsal when I saw my truck, and I went on the wild ride. So that's how I can remember it. And so that was interesting that Dad didn't show up.
Yeah.
And so then I was interviewed the next day on Saturday by a reporter from the broadcaster here in Viroqua. And so he put it front page in the newspaper, not only the broadcaster, but the broadcaster and the La Crosse Tribune, you know, are the same paper. So it got in the La Crosse Tribune. So if you go to Sunday Tribune of Memorial Weekend 2015, you can read. And it's pretty amazing. It's hilarious, actually. The whole story is hilarious. And so, you know, I could look back at it and laugh, when the reporter is telling me, or, you know, asking me about it, he kept asking me these questions like, would you do that again? And I was hurting like crazy. I had seven stitches, five on the outside, two on the inside of my knee. And I just got beat up really bad because he was going back and forth trying to get me out of there. And anyways, at first I'm like, oh, no way would I do that again. But then I'm like, when I'm thinking about it, it's like, well, yeah, somebody isn't going to come along and steal my truck and I see him drive it and I'm not going to say, hey, did you check the oil? It uses a lot of oil. Okay, have a good day.
And it made you locally famous.
And then I got this notoriety for doing something crazy. But anyways, yeah, that if you want to look it up, that's the way to find it.
Great, thanks. And so let's talk a little bit more about your philosophy on life and how things have changed for you as you've gotten older and had all these learning experiences.
Uh-huh. So it's interesting. When I was growing up, I've always had this like knowing that things were a certain way, and that when I would watch how people live their lives, it's like, well, they're not living it that way, so what's up? You know, and my parents were religious, and we would go to a Methodist church, and I picture myself like Jesus, you know, going and asking all these questions, you know, and most of them can't answer them. They can't. And I was like, I felt lost, you know? These guys are supposed to be the ones that know, talking with the preachers and that, and I couldn't get the answers. They'd send me in these little circles, spin me around, and it's like, that doesn't work for me. So I had nobody really to talk to back in those days. It was like very few people were actually very spiritual, or if they were very quiet about it because established religions like to suppress that kind of stuff. So nowadays, spirituality is everywhere. It's just like almost anybody you talk to. I mean, I guess because I'm real open about my me being a spiritual being, living a spiritual life, not a physical one. I have physical experiences, but I'm a spiritual being experiencing a spiritual life. This is a spiritual plane. And if you think of higher numbered planes as being heaven, I would say no, they're all heaven or they're all hell. It just depends on how you interact with it. And so there's way more people that with that same and similar philosophy that we're spiritual beings and that there's all this spiritual happenings going on right now, more so than ever in our existence in the world, because the way the planets are lining up, the way the solar system is in a different place in the galaxy. The galaxy is in a different place in the universe. And there's all these energies. If you get into astrology at all, you know, every planet has an energy to it. And when it's in close proximity to this and that, these energies are up. That's why you have an astrological chart that tells you what kind of energies you were born with. And that if you use that, you can go forth and prosper and watch out for a lot of pitfalls, because you know that you have a weakness in that area, so you don't want to go do that kind of stuff unless you're ready to say, I'm ready to overcome that weakness and I'm going to go do it.
Mm. So your destiny, but yeah. Taking time to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then finding that interconnectedness, sharing the human experience.
Yeah. And you can change your stars.
Hmm.
You know, you just have to be prepared for it, because that's when those traumatic situations arise, because you're energetically not really built for it because of when you were born. But anyway, so that all being said, the world is like opening to spirituality, and there's the religious groups are waning, and spirituality is actually blossoming, and so that's what the big difference that I see in the world. And I believe because that has happened, that us as spiritual beings having a human experience have stood up and said, no, we're not going to take this anymore. That we've come to a point where we will not allow others to take our free will away from us. And the spiritual guides that help us in this 3D world are there to see that those people won't do that if we have the intent not to give our free will up anymore.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you keep and maintain your free will? How do you train yourself? How do you reflect? What are some of the tools that you use?
Well, it's constantly being aware, and you got to constantly rein yourself in, because so not really sure how to approach that, because I'd like to tell you how it unfolds for me, how it has unfolded for me. That would take a long time. So right now, where I'm at right now, I feel pressured by society in certain areas, and I feel like they are way more powerful than me. How is little old me going to stand up to City Hall? You know, how do you fight City Hall, right? There's all kinds of songs about that, you know, that it just doesn't work. But I do feel that because this shift has happened and there's more spiritual awareness, that the guides will be there when I have to stand up in front of a city hall and tell them that I am a divine being, and because of that, I have certain rights, and those rights aren't something that anybody can take away from me. They are the right to my own sovereignty. And when I say sovereignty, I don't mean over anybody, but only over myself. And so, as a sovereign individual, nobody can tell me what to do or when to do it. Now, as human beings that are also divine, they can come to me and say, hey, what about if we did it this way? And I'll be like, well, I don't know if I like that way, because if I do it like this, then I feel like I'm going to manifest what I'm looking for, and I'm going to also make it better for all the people around me. And they're like, well, how's that going to happen? You know, so then there's this dialogue, and then I can say, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have to do that. I could do it like this, like you said. That would work. But I still am going to do this. And they're like, okay, I can see how that would work. And so with dialogue, then we can be a community that works together, and we can prosper and come together. Whereas, like, since we're talking about City Hall, most City Halls are set up to pull people apart, to pit neighbor against neighbor. They make these rules, and you know, let's use mowing your lawn as a situation. Okay, so I come from a forging background, and I understand how nature works. And I'm like, oh, in the fall, I've got all these moths and butterflies and these other bugs, and everything is nesting in this grass. If I mow it down to a golf course, it kills a lot of them. And the ones that are still down there, and maybe the ones that are just in the surface of the ground, are now going to freeze to death because they don't have that insulation, you know? And so I don't want to mow my lawn short, particularly at the end of the year. I don't want to mow my lawn short anytime, because if I leave it a little bit longer, but I mow it regularly, I'm not going to get the seed heads that people are worried about. But I am going to create an environment where the microbial life and the insect life and birds and all that have this relationship with my yard. And I don't have to have a feeder to bring them, because they naturally will do that. They'll feed on the insects, and life is good. And so if I have a blade of grass that crisscrosses instead of going straight up and down, and a neighbor says, hey, you can't do that, we have an ordinance against that. And so, you know, they generally won't even come talk to me. They'll go straight to the city hall and say, hey, his blades of grass are crossing. And then they come over and they slap a nuisance abatement on me. And I say, well, you can't do that. You can't do that around here. I'm like, well, why not? It's my yard, and I'm trying to protect this wildlife here. And you're saying I got to kill everything? What? You know, I don't understand. But I can't say that because I get 3 minutes to talk or something, you know? And so they just create an environment where they pit the neighbors against neighbors, because immediately, what do? I'm like looking around. It's like, well, look at his yard. Oh, and look at his. Hey, and what about your yard? Mm-hmm. I looked at your yard and your blades were crossing too.
Mm-hmm. You know. Being true to yourself, speaking your own truth.
Yeah.
but being open to having the dialogue and the conversation with our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can share our knowledge, our curiosity.
Yeah. And so the important thing then is to continue to be that sovereign individual. I always find myself in fear. Like, oh no, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do to me? You know, are they going to find me? They're going to take this away from me? They're going to kick me out of town? What's going to happen? And I get so worried that I can't even think straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I fall apart and I'm no longer sovereign.
Yeah.
And so I have to catch myself in that and say, okay, remember, I'm the guy that just, you know, got my truck back. I can do anything.
Yeah.
So
taking that anxiety or that anticipation and trying to...
Well, that's interesting because a lot of people are like, okay, I got to suppress that. You can't. You can't because then you're in denial. So there's a piece of you that feels like it's being overrun and overpowered and you have this bad feeling. You're like, oh no, and I don't want to have that feeling. So it's easy to just like throw it away and ignore it, but in reality it catches up to you after a while. So the way to handle it is to say, okay, I feel overwhelmed. I feel judged. I feel angry. I feel angry. Wow, I feel angry about this. And then once you feel it, you're like, oh, okay. What can I do about that now?
Mm-hmm.
But if I let that emotion get to me and I don't really feel it, I'm like, no, I don't want to feel that. It hurts. It feels icky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel it. Then I can't get to the point of clarity and saying, okay, what can I do about it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's one of the things that I do to help me move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I took the time to read your stars, and one of the things I learned was that you're very curious. You have a scientific mind, but you also, one of the words that was repeated was humanitarian.
Hmm.
So caring about each other, caring about community. And perhaps that's part of why you work so hard to create vinegars and sodas and share them with other people.
It's interesting because I started out just making a soda to share with people, and it was going to be a signature drink. Like this guy, he had a signature drink, right? I was going to make a signature drink, and I failed miserably.
Mm.
Because now I got 100 drinks. How can one of them be a signature drink? So that's kind of funny.
Maybe it's just a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... being creative and creating... Oh, I know where I was going now. Okay, so... So I started making these sodas. And I found out that I could make 5 different products from the same recipe. So first I have a lemonade, and then I have a soda, then I have a sparkling wine, and then I have a wine, and then I have a vinegar. And most of them get gone as a soda because they're so yummy. Mm. And I got to the point where I was like, ooh, these vinegars are pretty yummy too. So I would like make a super large batch so I couldn't drink it all. And so I'd get some vinegar left over. And one year I was gifted by some wonderful people a little building here in Viroqua. They let me use that whole house. They were flipping houses, and they'd bought this place, and they weren't doing anything with it because they were so busy with their other ones. And I asked them if I could use the kitchen in it, and I used the kitchen, and then I ended up using the dining room and another room and filled it up full of vinegars and sodas. And, and it was just unbelievable to look at. When you walk in, you got all these different colored bottles and you got all these different colored liquids within the bottles. There's a lot of them were clear so that you got the different colors in there. And then I would put a balloon on for an airlock to make wines and then vinegars. And you'd see balloons that were erect and some that were half erect and some that were limp, fell over, and those were already vinegars then. It was just unbelievable to see all that. But I made so many vinegars, I'm like, what am I going to do with all these vinegars? So then I had to start pairing them with sweet things. So I started making different syrups. And I made all kinds of different syrups. And so then I started making mocktails. And then I started making herbal preparations, like tinctures and things like that. And I'm like, oh, what if I took a elderflower soda and I turned it into a vinegar? Now I have an elder. Well, let me back up. Let's use echinacea because I like using that one because people understand that an echinacea is a respiratory helper, a virus helper, cold and flu helper. And so you can take a tincture of a root of the echinacea and it will help support your immune system. Okay, so if I take the flower, I turn it into a soda, and then I drink some of that, and I got some left over, turn it into a vinegar. Okay, so I have an echinacea vinegar. Okay, so there's got to be medicinal constituents in there, right? Okay, so then the next spring, I'm like, well, I'm going to make a syrup out of it. So I take maple sap, and I put it in my cooker, start cooking it, and I go over and I get some roots from the echinacea, and I throw them in that sap, and I boil it down to a syrup. Now I have decocted medicinal constituents out of that root into the syrup, and it's got a really good flavor. And I take that, and when spring comes, and it's summer before the echinacea bloom again, and I make another soda out of that, and then I use that syrup with the echinacea root syrup as the sweetener. Now I have the root and the flower is being fermented in a decoction of echinacea root into the sweetener. So now I'm building energy of this plant and getting different medicinal constituents because fermentation of the flower makes a different medicine than the root. And so you're adding that. And so then when I take the vinegar then and I put that with the flour and I take that syrup with the flour and create an oxymel or it would probably be some kind of Acer blend because it's maple syrup. Anyways, I'm building more energy into that concoction or elixir that I'm making there. And then I kept doing things like that. And finally, I got to the point where it's like, okay, ideally, some things are only pulling the medicinal constituents out with alcohol. All right, so I make a wine out of my echinacea, and then I distill that into a brandy. Now I have an echinacea brandy that I can take and put the root and the seeds of the echinacea in this brandy and get the constituents out that alcohol pulls out, and then build. You just keep building with all that, and pretty soon you're going to have a echinacea elixir that is going to be so strong that there ain't nothing that's going to touch it. And as soon as you are like feeling the flu come on or a cold come on, you just take a little shot of that and boom, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's the future of herbalism, is to keep building those medicinal constituents through all different ways to get one product in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To distill it down.
Through distillation and decoction and infusing all to make one product. Mm-hmm. And
when we were having dinner recently, you had some sniffles. And so we had horseradish at our house and said, mm-hmm. let's go dig up a horseradish root mm-hmm. and grind it up and add some vinegar and a little salt. And there you were, you know.
Clean using, sinuses.
Using food yeah. to help heal your body.
Yeah.
Kind of where we started to say, kind of taking it back to the basics and appreciating the plants for all that they have to give us.
Yeah. Yeah, that cleaned my sinuses up right there.
And it's delicious.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. That reminds me, we were talking about pokeberry, and now we're talking about horseradish. And I made a horseradish 2 years ago. I made a horseradish that I put pokeberry vinegar in that was that magenta. And the horseradish was so beautiful. The horseradish sauce was so beautiful with pokeberry vinegar in it. It was just crazy.
Mm.
And it tasted super good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, being able to share that with your friends and family, too.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? Where do you want to go from here? What are you curious about?
What am I curious about? I'm actually, you know, we've talked about, you know, if you're living life, how can you die?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I feel like in my gut, instinctually, intuitively, that we really don't need to die.
Hmm.
That death comes from that normalcy, and it comes from not being spontaneous. It comes from a saying that, you know, I've learned everything.
Hmm.
There's nothing else to learn. And so why be here? And so you just like, well, okay. You manifest death.
I call those bujums.
Bujums.
Yeah. So that's a word. I believe it's a tree that grows in the Sonora Desert. It's also a physics term. Mm. But it means the space in between. Mm. The things that you don't know.
Mm.
So I work and travel. And I try to leave space in an itinerary for the bujums.
Uh-huh.
The things that you don't know that you don't know until you know them.
All right.
Yeah. So you always have to be open.
Open for the boochums.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, something's yeah. around the corner.
Yeah. So I feel, you know, that that we have lived so long in habitual patterns and normalcy and fear and that we've lost the knowledge that we are beings that can live forever, and that our bodies are designed to repair themselves. And when they don't repair themselves, it's because there's some part of ourselves that we have denied, and therefore the energy does not flow in that area. When the energy flows in every area of your life, then life is constant, non-ending. And so when we start thinking about a spiritual life, we think, well, you know, look at the Bible. You look at Jesus and how he was crucified. You know, they killed him. 3 days later, what did he do? He came back to life. And he took that physical body with him and ascended into a higher realm that vibrates differently, but he still has his body.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that we too can do these things and more. And so I take that to heart. And in my experience in life, I see how it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm experiencing some of the negative things. My body is falling apart. I am aging. And so I just relearned that the reason is because I have these habits, and in those habits, I've chose not to live life anymore, just to say, oh, this was a safe place in the past, it's safe now. And I don't want safe. I want life. I want the new. I want the element of, oh, maybe it's not safe here, but I'm gonna experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Yeah, we're given life to find it out, aren't we?
Yeah, and so, it's, coming crunch time for me. I'm 66 and feeling like I'm falling apart. And so it's going to get real.
You're going to squeeze out that elixir.
I am.
Yeah. Fantastic. Tell me about the Kashtan tractor pull.
Oh, the Kashtan tractor pull. That's interesting because... So my parents did foster care for two male adults, John Jones and Roger Davis. And John Jones and Roger were like opposites. Johnny was this sanguine personality, he's the life of the party, and he wants to dance with all the girls. And, he was, just mentally challenged enough that he, was happy all the time. Imagine that. I wish I was that way. And so, I learned a lot from that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how he has imaginary friends. And, and he's like, he walks by. I gave him a truck when he lived at my parents'. And I... disconnected transmission so he couldn't drive it around, because he would, he knew how to drive, and so I didn't want that, my parents didn't want that, and the social workers, they didn't want that, so we disconnected it, and so he would rev it up, and he'd tinker with it, pretend like he's working on it, and he had a good old time with that truck. So he'd walk by that truck and he'd be like, oh, shut up, I'll come and take care of you later. so he talked to the inanimate objects, and later in life, I would in a way ridicule him. It's like, that thing can't talk to you. But later in life, I'm like, whoa, it did talk to him. I know it did. It's like, everything has a certain amount of consciousness to it, not that we might call consciousness, but it wanted attention from Johnny, and Johnny's like, I ain't got time right now, sorry, I'll see you later. So I learned stuff like that from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing the flowers talk, it's like, whoa, that's what Johnny hears. Anyways, getting off on a tangent there. Okay, so Roger's the exact opposite. Johnny's the romantic. And Roger's like, I got to have the meat and potatoes, and I'm going to go from the table, and I'm going to go up in my room, and I'm going to watch this TV program that I watch all the time. Johnny's like, I want to go to town and see if there's a dance. I want to see if there's any pretty girls around. I want to go. So they're the exact opposites. Anyway, so one time, I took him to the Kashtan Fall Festival, which is the Kashtan's, this is Kashtan, Wisconsin, which is just a couple towns away from Baroqua here, where we're recording this. And so I take him there, and Roger's always, he's kind of a big, burly kind of guy, and he's always bragging about, hey, check my muscle. He'd always do that. And I said, hey, Roger, look at that strongman contest over there. They're going to pull them semis. Why don't you? You think you can do that? He's like, yeah, I could do that. And he's strutting around. He's like, I could do that. And I says, you wanna? I'll sign you up. He's like, he's hemming and hawing. I'm like, I know you could do it too. I bet you could. And he's like hemming and hawing. And I said, if I pulled the semi, would you pull it? Yeah, I would. All right, let's go sign up. And so we signed up. And so I pull first. So we have to write a number down. Or no, they wrote a number down on papers. And then we had to pull which number, which order we're going to pull in. So I pulled before him. And so these are semis with trailers on them. They weigh 25,000 pounds.
Wow.
Big trailers. And it's on a flat surface. And so they harness you up, and they got this, you know, tow rope thing hooked up to them. And they got a guy in there. And they got it running, but they got it in neutral. And, you know, just in case they don't want somebody to, I mean, have a heart attack, fall down, and the thing run them over, you know. So this guy's in there to help protect that. Anyway, so it is really hard getting them started, you know. So the bigger you are, the more weight you have, and you lean into it, you can get it to roll easier. And I'm like 160 pounds, and I don't know, I might have been 150 at that time, you know. And I'm one of the smallest guys and probably the oldest guy pulling these trucks. Now, everybody's, you know, young 20, 30-year-olds, you know, they're rowdy, and they're gonna tear this street up, you know, and here I'm this old guy, you know, and I'm skinny, and so I don't have that advantage, you know, and so I tried different techniques, you know, like slamming against it, you know, and that just hurts, and it does, it's like, oh, it's not doing anything, although it did do something, but I didn't feel anything move. You know, but anyway, so I got it going, and I got it rolling, and I'm like, whoa, and it's going faster, and it's going faster, and I'm getting halfway done, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't wait, I can't stop now, I'm almost there, and if I stop, it's going to be hard to get it going again, I got to keep going, and I got to the end, and I'm like, whoo. And everybody's cheering me on and everything, you know. And that was an adrenaline rush, man. Mm-hmm. And so then Roger did it, and he pulled it too. And then, like, the next year, it's like, wow, I just got to do that for myself. Because that was crazy. That was cool. I did that. Little old me, skinny little old me. That was even before I jumped into the truck. You know, I didn't know I was that great. So I started learning about myself that way.
Yeah.
And I kept doing it every year just because it was fun. And every year I got better. I would take a second off of my thing. And the interesting thing was I did it barefoot. And other people with their tennis shoes on would start slipping and sliding, but my bare feet didn't. But there was, I got to tell you this one time. They didn't have a semi. And so they used a lime spreader truck, which was insane. It was stick shift, so it had thicker oil in it. Plus it had tires that were like 4 feet across and 5 feet tall.
Wow.
And four of them. And I pulled number one that year. And so I'm up there. And I'm like, rah, rah, and I'm not going anywhere. It's like, I got to do this. I can't make a fool out of myself because, you know, the next guy's going to come along. He's just going to walk away with it, and I'm going to look stupid. I can't do that. And I'm like, I couldn't get it to go. And finally, they sent a guy in the back to push it. And then they sent a second guy back there, and they got these two guys pushing, and I'm starting to go, and I'm feeling good about myself, you know? And then I get about halfway, and I'm like, it's pulling me down and pulling me down. I'm like, no, I can't stop, because I know what it's like. If it stops, it's so hard to get going, I might as well give up, and I'm not going to give up. And I pulled, and I pulled, and I got it all the way down to the end, and everybody's cheering and cheering. And then they tell me two guys was pushing. It's like, why'd you do that? You wrecked my life. I thought it was all me. It's like, and so then the guy that puts the show on is a big bodybuilder guy, and he's the one that has the pulling stuff, you know. And he puts on the harness, and he goes to pull that thing, and he's like, nope, can't be pulled. I just pulled it. Yeah, but you had some helpers. Oh, that's when I found out. So then he says, okay, so the way we're going to run this from now on is we're going to have one pushing and one pulling. And that's how we're going to, because everybody's here and they want to have a show, you know. And then I pushed while another guy pulled. And it's interesting because this other guy didn't have it in him. He didn't trust himself enough to just keep fighting and pushing and saying, come on, Dwight, let's go. Instead, he gave up. And I'm pushing, I'm still pushing. And he's standing there, gave up, and I'm still pushing. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Why did it get so hard? And I look up and he's like taking the harness off. And I'm like, what am I pushing for? But it was interesting how, you know, you got to have that determination. You got to, and I burnt off layers of my skin on my bare feet on that one. My feet were raw for a week after that. That was crazy.
Well, I know that some of your conservative children when they were younger were very embarrassed by your lack of conforming to social norms and walking around barefoot all the time.
Yes, they were. Poor things.
Yeah, you embarrassed them.
Yeah.
But that's fun.
But listen to this. So remember the truck story? Mm-hmm. So I not only got in the La Crosse Tribune and the Broadcaster here in Viroqua, but the Minnesota Star was seeking me out. They're like, how do I find this guy? And they're looking up Zitlows, and they found my daughter, Gail Zitlow, found a phone number for her, and they called her up, and they said, well, this is so-and-so from the Star Tribune and or Star paper in Minneapolis, and we'd like to do a story on, we think it's your father. Now, does this sound like your father, that he had a truck that got stolen and that he found it and jumped in the back and went on a crazy ride? She's like, yeah, that's my dad. That was funny. But, you know, she's like, I know who he is now, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah. It's okay to be an anomaly. It's okay to be the weird one, right?
Yeah.
It's more fun that way.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where the life is. That's where the romance is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to listen to your own heart and to be your own self.
Yeah.
So we are broadcasting from the beautiful town of Viroqua, Wisconsin. And I wanted to thank Mike and WDRT for this opportunity and for Dwight to accept my invitation to come here and have this conversation with me.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for doing this interview. It, you know, it's you know, good for me to be able to share parts of my life that can maybe help other people make their life lighter and easier. And in a way to share my voice for my offspring and my offspring's offsprings and the future, to be like, hey, that's my grandpa, my great-grandpa. It's like, we could learn from that.
That's the humanitarian in you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you.
It's my pleasure.